Back in the Renaissance, having skill in many different areas was seen as a good thing. But somehow, things changed, mainly due to the Industrial Revolution, which required individuals to get even more specialized in doing one thing really well, in order to repeat it over and over and over, like cogs. Since then, and even before, the phrase "jack of all trades, master of none" has been widely used to negatively refer to people who engaged in eclectic activities. Till our days, doing many things with less specialization has had bad connotations. Today, we're here to debunk this myth and to learn about the benefits of being good at many things and how having a Renaissance kind of profile might positively influence your career. Hey, it's Nono, and this is the Getting Simple Podcast. Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that you can find a detailed list of episode notes, transcripts, and past episodes at gettingsimple.com, and that you can listen to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Hi everyone, it's Nono here, and today I'm glad to introduce you to Carmen Chamorro. Hi Carmen, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good.
Happy to be here.
I'm happy to be here as well. It's hard for me to define you, Carmen. So the short version of her bio, I'll say that Carmen has chosen what's called a quote-unquote portfolio career. Mm-hmm. And I would just invite you to stay with us if you want to learn more about what this portfolio career is. And if you want to learn what multi-potentialites are, and maybe if you're one, and much, much more. Yeah, thanks so much for being here today, Carmen.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, the first thing that I would love for you to tell us is a bit about yourself and how you got to where you're today.
Okay. Well, about myself, I guess I'm someone that is trying to be authentic in life. I don't like to define myself. That's why I guess it's hard for you to define me. Because I think that when you have labels, you stop growing in the process of getting to know myself every day. And how did I get where I am? Well, I guess with a lot of effort, just by trying to connect with myself. I've been trying to know who I am for many, many years.
Maybe to place ourselves in the present day, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe tell us how your work life is today. And because, okay, you know, I know that it's remote work and a lot of many different things. I don't want to spoil too much. And maybe how and why you transitioned from what you were doing before, mm-hmm, and where you're now, like in location and also responsibilities and the projects you're engaging in.
Okay. If I come back to my early days when I was a child, I used to like to do many, many different things. I loved exploring and doing different stuff. And at some point when I was a teenager, they asked me, what do you want to do as a profession? What are you going to be doing? And I didn't know how to answer that question. And that made me be anxious for many, many years. So I ended up, I guess, just following what other people was telling me. So my father, for example, he's a physicist. So I just tend to go to a science kind of career because somehow I was always told to choose something. At the end, when I actually had to choose at the end of my high school or whatever we call it in English, you know, in my case was co, it was called co in Spanish. I decided to choose something that was a mix of everything for me, or at least that's what I thought it was. And I chose architecture. Architecture for me had everything. I love writing. I love designing. I love psychology. I love selling stuff. I love sharing. I love solving problems. I love mathematics. I love so many things that I thought that architecture had all those, which is, it's something that is true. So I studied architecture and I thought that that was my chosen career, and it was for a while. So that's where I studied. But already when I was studying it, it was tough for me to be I saw people really passionate about it. And I never felt that, because I always feel passionate at the beginning for things. But then when I know a little bit about them, I get bored. And I was always feeling really bad because I could see people really passionate about architecture, really passionate about this and that. And I never felt that thing. So then I finished my studies. Apparently I was a good architect. So I ended up working for Norman Foster in London. And I stayed there for 8 years. Before that, because I was studying and working at the same time, and I started working when I was really young, I was working in many different things. And I love that thing of changing jobs and exposing myself to many different tasks. Before I finished my studies and before I started working for Norman Foster, I was working as a waitress for many, many years, 10 years. I really enjoyed working as a waitress, for example. I was working as a teacher. I work in PR. I've been picking strawberries in Denmark. I've done so many different things, and I always loved that. So again, just coming back to the architecture part of my life, I started working at Foster. But then again, at some point, I got bored. Like, my mission, I kind of lost it again. I didn't know what my purpose was. I was good at what I was doing, but I didn't know why I was doing it. So then I started again, as I used to do when I was a child. When I was like tired of something, I was just changing it and I was doing a new activity. So I then started looking for new things. So I started a degree in psychology, started studying in 2011. It was almost 10 years ago. So I started that, but then I thought, because then I still had all these limiting beliefs and, you know, I was like, I'm not gonna like need 5 years to finish this. Like, it's too long. So I just quit and I did it for 2 years and then didn't stop. So I created an events company. Every time that I was doing a party, a lot of people was coming, a lot. So someone told me, why don't you do events? But somehow I was like, because I need a purpose. Why am I going to do an event? Just for the party. So that's when I created my analog parties, which was trying to solve a problem, which was the fact that it's really difficult to meet people in London. People, it's really addicted to their phones. So I just created events in which you had to switch off your phone and interact with people. That worked really well. So again, I was just trying to look for another thing, because I was like being told that I needed to choose just one thing. That's what I was trying to do, the whole thing. So I started this events company thinking, okay, I'm going to quit architecture and I'm going to be doing this. But then obviously it was tough for me to do the whole business myself, and I got bored as well. So then I discovered coaching, and somehow that started changing a little bit my way of seeing things. I also thought, wow, coaching, this is really great. This is something that I feel I've been doing always, like trying to motivate people to do stuff. So, wow, this is going to be the thing that I'm going to choose. And again, same thing. I was just trying to choose one thing. And somehow again, I started feeling bored. I just thought, why do I have to choose? I've been my whole life choosing, and I don't want to choose anything. I want to just be doing many different things. You know, I want to connect with my inner child. I always talk about this thing. I want to be me, and I am a person that needs to do many different things. When I discovered coaching, like specifically life coaching and career coaching, that's when I realized that this was a possibility. The possibility of doing more than one thing and not feeling bad because of it.
Why would you feel bad about it?
Because of society, because of what people is telling you have to do, because of sentence like the one that you said before. Because if you are not specialized, then people think that you are not good at things. And that's really dangerous, because you don't feel good when you want to do more than one thing. I was about to say that I had a moment in my life, like during that time, in which something happened to me that was super powerful. I had a brain surgery that made me realize, because I then had an infection and I almost left the planet, basically. That made me realize that all this is not that important at the end. What is important is to be who you are and to be connected with who you are, because otherwise you're always going to be miserable. It's not that I didn't know before. It's just that that was a trigger that helped me big time, that helped me a lot. So after that, I quit my job. I did it from one day to another, in the sense that I had that in mind, obviously, but I wanted to feel, I didn't want to have another job ready. I wanted to feel that it was like a starting point. I even jumped from a plane to just like, that was like my, for me, it was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to jump, but I'm going to just literally jump into a new life. And that's what I did. And so since then, everything started like flowing, and it was really natural for me to do everything that I've been doing since then. So I just like decided to, you know what? I'm going to do coaching, but then I'm going to also do architecture, and I'm also going to do design, and I'm also going to do events. And I love traveling. So I was like, I need to also include all these within my professional life. So I started working for a company based in US called Global Experiences. It's an international education company, and I work for them as well, apart from all the things that I do. And that allows me also to kind of motivate people to connect with who they are, because we work with young people. And I think that this planet would be a better place if we were all connected with what we do. And that's why I'm here.
I think it's also sad in some way that we need this kind of breakthrough to change. You've mentioned to me before that you have this sort of fear to not changing, right? Can you comment a bit more on that?
Yeah, that was always behind all my decisions. When I was having to choose something, I was always scared of having to be doing that the whole time. So I love change. I am in love with change. If I don't change, I struggle. I need to be changing. I need my days to be different. I need my experiences to be different every day. Otherwise, I feel that I'm not living. I feel that I'm not alive. So that's the reason why I'm afraid of not changing, basically. So that's why I don't like labels. Because when I have to define myself, as I was telling you before, I feel that I need to stop, because it's like kind of, okay, this is my label. I don't like labels. I never did. When I was a teenager, I used to have a lot of friends, and they were all from different kind of tribes, let's say. You know, I have my rockers friends and people that they liked more commercial music, or they were, you know, different kind of groups. And I love being with all of them, because, you know, we can find good and bad in every situation. And I love to learn about that. I don't like to be, you know, just attached to one thing.
For those who don't know what it is, can you explain a bit in depth what you mean when you say the portfolio career or the Renaissance profile?
Yeah. This is the only way I find, if I want to define myself, that word helps me a lot, because it's a definition, but it's not a definition, right? So having a portfolio career means that you have different jobs that you do, different things that you're good at, different incomes, and you can be changing. You can be doing different things, but then you can then learn another skill and then start having a new job. It's a profile that allows you to reconnect with that Renaissance period, which I really value. Because again, I think every profile, it's needed. Don't get me wrong. I don't think that everyone needs to have a portfolio career, but I think that there are people that they have it and they don't know they have it and they struggle.
In what situations do you think people should do just one thing?
Well, there are people that feel passionate about something that they, I don't know, an artist, let's say, someone that loves drawing. You can feel that they are flowing when they are doing that. So they are specialists on that. They love doing. It's when you connect with what you do. So if you connect with doing something for hours and hours and hours, same activity, same thing, then that's it. You need to be doing that. If you feel that you need to change, then you need to change. You need to listen to your body, basically. So the situation, if you ask me the question, in which situation, I would say, if you feel okay with it, then do it. If you don't do it. That's it. It's really simple.
Getting a bit more in depth into these terms, right? Specialist versus multipotentialites, or, you know, portfolio career and things like this. How would you describe, or what would be the traits of a multipotentialite?
Someone that loves change. That's first thing. People with that kind of profile, they tend to be happy when they need to adapt to change. People that they like to learn many different things, they are natural learners. People that love challenges, that like to solve problems, like that they get bored if they do something for a long, long time. Sometimes you do something and you can do it for months and even years, but then you get bored. So it's not, you don't have a time that you can define, but it's that people that are interested in many different things, that love to learn about many different things. That's the kind of person that I would describe as a portfolio careerist.
Portfolio careerist?
Yes.
Just to repeat a bit and to emphasize what this means, this is also what has been referred before as polymath, the Renaissance person. They're called scanners as well. So yeah. This I learned about in a talk by Emily Wapnick, like a TED talk that you recommended.
Yes.
She mentions, I think there are different lines of thoughts there, but she mentions that many skills are transferable across disciplines. I have read other writers mentioning that, you know, there's like a limited set of things that you can really transfer, but I can definitely see the advantage of, I would say, not distracting yourself, but taking breaks from one thing and then focusing on the other. Upon a reference that you also told me, Originals by Adam Grant, he mentions how, at least on his psychology research, much of the original work happens on those moments when you procrastinate doing other work. Mm-hmm. This is what Jessica Hist refers to as procrastinate work. And, you know, I don't know if you have any hints on in what way might making or doing many different things might help people find their own selves.
There are always good and bads on things. So obviously, when you have this kind of profile, it's difficult to focus. You need to know that from the beginning. And that's possibly something that's the reason why those kind of profiles are not that valued. Because you need to really, let's say, control the beast before you can actually take advantage of it. So focusing when you like many different things is really difficult. But once you learn how to do that, then things become really, really enjoyable and easy. And then talking about procrastination, that's a trait that portfolio careerists have. There are so many things you can do, so you need to choose. Again, even if obviously choosing one thing, it's something that you don't want to do, you still need to choose what you are going to do. So sometimes you procrastinate because you don't really know what to, like, shall I do this now or this other thing? So also you need to work on that. You need to work on that thing. There are really useful tools for all this, for learning how to focus, learning how to procrastinate less, but also take the advantage of procrastination because it has.
What would be some specific techniques that you use yourself to be able to manage multiple different activities?
So one thing that I do, I have a journal and I write everything down. I have to-do lists and I prioritize stuff. I always have a plan. I have always a long-term plan, a short-term plan. Even I have daily activities that I do because, you know, otherwise I get crazy. So the way I prioritize things, it's based on those long-term or short-term goals that I have. So for the focus, I normally, lately I use different techniques. I change always. As I said, I am always changing. So I love to try different things. Lately, I'm trying this Pomodoro technique, which I'm loving. It's really powerful, especially I think for profiles like mine. You work for 25 minutes and then you have breaks for 5 or 10 minutes. And that helps me a lot because what is always happening to me, it's this fear of change. It happens even in half an hour. So when I'm just doing 25 minutes of work, I know that then I will have 5 minutes to just like read an article or talk with a friend or like check something. So that allows me to focus on the main task that I'm doing at that moment. Something that helps me a lot.
So a variation technique that I've seen is Cal Newport's technique in deep work. Well, he actually does sprints of 1.5 hours and then 1 hour break. To, you know, that I feel like if you're not immersed, that works better when you're doing just one thing. We're not changing between many different things. Because if you have too many things, the thought of like breaking for one entire hour multiple times a day is a bit overwhelming. But I think that when I've been immersed in just doing one single project, that works a bit better. Because, you know, 1.5 hours, as he says, it may be 30, 40 minutes you can get into the zone. And then when you're at 1.5 hours, you're tired already. You need a break. He would use those 1 hour breaks as what he calls productive meditation. So he does like contemplative walks over the things that he's done and the next steps he has to take. So in some way, he doesn't just go on Facebook for an hour or start watching Netflix. It's in those work hours that you have, just leaving breaks for other sort of disconnection where you can rehearse in your mind the next things that you have to do. And at least to me, this, you know, when I have projects that involve technical skills and things like that, leaving a few days between when I think of what I need to do and the solution usually brings a lot of ideas randomly when I'm walking or doing other things. Yeah, I'll let you tell us if you have any other techniques.
I actually think that's really interesting. And that made me think that sometimes, you know, you work when you think you're not working. And everyone that knows the creative process knows that that's the way it is. When you are creating something, you need to leave the ideas rest in your head before you put them on a paper. I've never done that like consciously, meaning that I never did this thing that you just said of, okay, I'm going to just contemplate. But I somehow think I do that in a kind of a different way, I guess because of I've been trained to do that, let's say. But it's true that if you don't let your thoughts rest, then you like the best ideas. That's why procrastination is so interesting, because sometimes procrastination is needed because of that. Because you need to let your ideas there. And then maybe you are in the shower and you're like, oh, wow, I think we could do this or that, or that. I love those moments, by the way. Those are the best moments ever.
Yeah, you need shower notes so you can write on the shower and capture those
thoughts. Exactly. It's just really good. It's really good when you have an amazing idea and you're like just kind of in the middle of something that is not related with work.
I will bring another study from Adam Grant's book because he has this, and you know, there is like the good side and the bad side. There is one experiment that they did where they, you know, they will pose an idea of something you had to solve in like subjects, you know, the people who were undertaking the experiment.
Yeah.
They will put an idea on their minds and then they will give them time to do a mindless task. Something like playing invaders or playing something, some game that doesn't require a lot of focus or a lot of thinking, right? And they would compare like a brainstorming session afterwards between those subjects and the ones that had been playing the game and then given the idea of what they had to solve, but not given time to do a mindless task between knowing what they had to solve and then providing solutions, right? So it seems like we are more creative, more original when we have that mindless time in between. So the shower or like walking or like going for a swim or things like that don't require a lot of thinking. It's just like mechanical, just body movement. I like that because if you know that it works that way, you can use it to your advantage and also protect the disadvantages. One example would be if you think that, and I'm guilty of this myself, but if you check email right before lunch, or if you check email right before going to the swimming pool, or right before getting to write. That's going to be in your mind. It's not like you just check email and you can disconnect, right? You can just like snap your fingers and then, okay, let's take a break now. Whatever you put on your mind before doing something, let's say mindless or something you're trying to relax, is going to be on your, you know, on your background network there on the brain. So you got to choose carefully what it is. So it's just good to have that mindset so you know that it's not a great idea to mindlessly read things or check things or consume information right before certain periods. But it can be used to your advantage if you say, okay, let's read this problem or see what I need to do if you actually want to try to have ideas on, I don't know, maybe you're just going to the field for 2 days and you say, okay, let's just put this in my mind and use it to my advantage.
That's really, really cool as well. If you do things being aware, then you will always be more powerful. That's for sure. That's why knowing yourself is that important. And I was thinking when you were sharing that experiment, I was thinking about, I'm reading now a book called The Emotionally Intelligent Office. And they were talking actually about how important it is to play. And I think we forgot that. Socially, it's not well seen when you are like having fun when you work, which I never understood. I think that if you are working and you are having fun, you're always going to be doing your job better. So I'm not sure where that idea comes from, but it doesn't work for me at least. And I find that when I'm having fun, I'm more productive. And I do things when I'm laughing, when I'm doing teamwork, when I'm just like sharing jokes with my colleagues. It just works better.
What distracts you? So when you're trying to work, what does take you off the screen or off the project?
Everything. I get distracted by everything. It's interesting because it depends. It's not that dramatic. But if I'm really focused on something, if I'm enjoying something, if I'm in the flow, then nothing. But for me to be there, it's not that easy. It's really interesting because I'm really extreme. I'm super extreme. I can be either distracted by everything, either distracted by nothing. And when I say nothing, it's not even, I even forget to go to the toilet. You know what I mean? It's like I get doing something. I now got into origami myself, like lately during this quarantine, I discovered that. And I can be hours doing that. And I just don't get tired.
What's been hard transitioning from an office work to like remote work and multiple projects?
Well, obviously for me, that I'm a really social person, being in touch with people face to face. I miss that big time. But I prefer this way of working. Obviously, I miss going for lunch with your colleagues, going to someone's desk and have a little chat. I love that and I miss it. But I'm much more efficient the way I work now. I choose my times. I choose my schedule. I started analyzing myself more in that sense. I know when I'm more productive, when I'm less productive. Yeah, but definitely I miss the people.
When would that be? When would you be more productive?
I think that nothing is permanent. And again, we all try to define ourselves the whole time. Like, no, I'm a morning person. I'm a night person. I'm none of that. Sometimes I have days in which I have no energy and I don't want to work. And then other days I'm like, I can work 12 hours in a row. So not really sure how to answer that question, to be honest with you. I know that, again, it's come back to the same principle. I just hear my body when I'm connected with myself, then that's when I am really productive.
And when do you think you get your best ideas?
When I'm, again, connected with myself and when I'm relaxed, when I'm not second-guessing myself, when I'm not thinking of what other people is going to be thinking, or just when I'm like just me, when I trust what is happening. When I trust and I accept, things come like easily.
What do you understand as work-life balance?
Work-life balance. I don't like that concept. It feels to me like work-life balance. It means that when you work, you're not living, which for me doesn't make any sense. For me, work-life balance means life balance. If you ask me, do you rest? Do you have fun? Do you need to be living when you work? So when you are connected with what you do, you don't feel you are working. And some people will argue, when you say if you love what you do, you're not really working. There are people that they say, no, that's not true. And of course, when you're working, sometimes you will feel that you're tired. But also, if you are partying, you will have moments in which you are not enjoying either. So that thing of course, you will have moments in which you're not happy, but you need to feel that you're not working. And again, you will have moments of, you know, downs and ups, but you will also have them when partying, as I'm saying.
Yeah, there are also some lines of thought that understand that your job doesn't necessarily need to align with your life passions. As long as you have a responsibility or something you're doing that you feel that contributes to something in the world, that you are improving yourself, so you're acquiring more skills and you're fulfilling your professional life, you can have also passions outside of that, and it doesn't necessarily need to align completely. What we're trying to do here is like saying, can we spend time working on projects that I have fun with and that I, you know, that I like or enjoy in some way? They're always going to be the hard parts that you have to push through, and that's going to be everywhere. Even in, you know, even if you like running, if you do a 20K run, like that's going to be hard at the end, right? So you got to push to finish. But I do believe that, yeah, that the goal should be that you're doing something that fulfills you in some way or another, or at least that contributes to you improving skills or...
You definitely have to be connected with what you do. That's human. It's human. You need a purpose. And I'm not saying it doesn't need to be as you are saying. Maybe the purpose is having money to then do other activities. So don't get me wrong. It's not that you need to feel connected with every minute. No, but you need to be connected with yourself and what you are doing. So if you are doing something because the end of that thing, it's giving you X, whatever, then that's fine as well. But you need to be connected. If you're struggling where you work, then again, you will be miserable.
You've mentioned before that you're now doing life coaching as a job, right? So day to day, you're like working with people. What kind of people would be the ones that you are coaching, the people who come to you, or how does that happen? And what sort of advice would you give someone? What's the initial advice or how you would continue to the path of leading someone through coaching their life?
Another positive thing about having a portfolio career is that since you don't depend on any of the incomes that you get, but on all of them, let's say, then you always do things the best way you can. In the sense that you don't do things because of the money. You do them because you like to do them. Why am I saying this? Because the kind of people I work with are people I feel connected with. People that they normally have a similar profile to mine, or people that they want to explore their career and life paths. And what I normally do is like, I don't like to give advice in the sense of if someone asks me for advice, I will give it. No problem at all. But at the end, when you give advice, your advice is always based on you and your experience. So what I like to do more is just to try and get into the person I have in front of me and just like try to understand from inside that person what they need. And from there, try to guide them. But they have to be the ones choosing their path, because that's exactly what I've been trying to avoid my whole life. Someone telling me what to do. I don't tell people what to do, but I just try to make them connect with who they are.
You previously mentioned to me the Myers and Briggs test, or also known as the 16 personalities test. I would love for you to comment on how you think for somebody to take this test or a similar one and learn about their strengths and their values and the way that they are, how does that affect someone positively on how they live their life, not only on their careers, but how they live day by day?
Before talking about this, I want to say that again, coming back to these labels and defining who we are with a label, we need to be careful with all these kind of tools. They are really useful because they give you hints on who you are. Before taking those tests, you need to make sure that you're not feeling that you define yourself, because you can change, you know. You can have a strength and then after some years, learn how to do other things and become really good at them. Everything is constantly changing. So again, I don't like to put labels. But if you start analyzing these kind of things, which is your personality type, which are your strengths, your values, your skills. All those things are really good if you want to start analyzing a little bit what it is that you are more connected with. It's a tool, but you need to be careful with it, because otherwise you are in a prison. You are again defining yourself and like, oh no, I'm this personality, so I cannot be that. But they're really useful as a starting point.
So one of the things that I guess also determines a lot how we live our lives and what we decide to take on learning or working or things like that is your definition of success. How would you define success?
Success for me is being authentic, being yourself. You can be successful by being president of or a CEO of a company. You can be successful by being a gardener, being whatever you want to be. Success is always internal. It's never external. I had a conversation with a friend not long ago. She told me that she met another friend that we have in common, and that he was asking her, what is Carmen doing? And her answer was, Carmen is doing Carmen. And when she told me that, I felt that that was success. Because if someone is saying that I'm doing Carmen, that means that I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And if not only me is realizing that, but other people are realizing it, that's success for me.
Yeah, now that you say it, I also have a friend that sometimes finds things there. I said, like, oh, look at this. This is so no-no. And it's cool because there is something that defines you. And again, it's not cool to label for the sake of labeling. But when it's something that is good and you see that the other person is actually understanding who you are and what's making you be you, I think having that identity and being comfortable with it is really important to know who you are.
Yeah.
Who would be some of your role models?
One of my biggest role models in life is my grandmother. My grandmother, she was an amazing person, and she was herself the whole time. She had her inner child always alive. She was 89 when she passed away. And at that moment, she was still a child. You could still have fun with her. She was always connected with who she was. She was always in this kind of, I call it a Jedi side. She was always happy and good with everyone. She was just wonderful. I had her as my main role model. Then I have people that I like, obviously, many people that I admire. I like Tim Ferriss, for example. I think he's a good example of what I do, let's say. Not that I'm Tim Ferriss, obviously. I'm Carmen. But I think he's really powerful. I like also the founder of Headspace called Andy. I don't remember the surname. I'm so sorry, but that's fine.
So he's the guy who reads all the meditation.
Exactly.
Audios, right?
Yeah. I think it's a really powerful man. He has a really interesting story.
What's his story, if you can comment on
it? His story is that he's from Bristol. For some reason, I think something traumatic or something happened in his family, and he moved to Tibet and he became a monk. He was a monk for many years, and then he decided he wanted to share everything that he learned during that time. So he created with a colleague, he created a Headspace. He thought that meditation was something so powerful that he had to share it. So while he was creating the company, Headspace, he moved to Russia and he was working as a juggler in a circus while he was doing that. And I find that really powerful as well. Because if you imagine someone juggling and then thinking that he's also doing something related with meditation and he was a monk, that's what I mean. I feel connected because I feel similar to him in that sense. I can be doing really crazy things and then I do meditation every day, for example. So yeah, those are some of my role models.
If you could send a message to the world, one sentence on a paper or billboard, something that they will read tomorrow, what would your message to the world be?
I would say, trust your nature, be you, be yourself. Don't be scared of change, because there is a balance. We are all needed and we are all here. We just need to go to the right place of the puzzle. There is a balance in the world. And you're here with a profile and you are here to use it. To just be authentic and trust yourself. Accept yourself and have fun.
Not an easy task.
No. I know that when I talk, some people, they tell me, wow, it was so easy to get there. Because, you know, when people see you from outside, they don't see the struggle. They don't see how much effort took you to get where you are. Being yourself and being connected with who you are, it's really, really tough. You need to open a box that can show you things that you don't like to see. It's important to know that before you start this journey. It's important to know that you're going to suffer, but when you suffer, you learn more. And that's the way it is.
You've talked about effort before, and I wanted to know if you have any activities or any things or any skills that you try to hone and you do deliberate practice.
I think I'm doing that the whole time. I'm kind of obsessed with efficiency. The fact that I like to do too many things means that I need all my time. I tend to be aware of how I use my time almost constantly. I try to be efficient. If I am doing something that I feel is really repetitive, I always try to find ways to do them, to do things more automatic or to be more efficient with my time. I don't like wasting time. It is one of my, I'm really, really crazy about that. I don't like wasting time.
What are some of the things that usually make you waste your time?
I tend to read things and then jump from one thing to another and then get crazy. I click one link and then I go to another link. And then at the end, I forget why I was reading what I'm reading. And that's a waste of time. Absolutely.
What do you think about mindful technology, or how does modern technology affect our lives?
I think technology, it's a really powerful tool. And I think that can make our lives much better, but we need to use it really carefully. We need to be really responsible because it can be your enemy. You need to be aware. If you are aware of the time you spend on social media, for example, then it can be good. But I think that nowadays we are not educated in that sense. I think that even in schools and college and high schools, we should have a subject related to that, mindful technology. Because I think we are missing things and we are not being efficient. And as I said, I'm really obsessed with efficiency. I think we are not efficient with technology.
I'm really happy to hear you say that because I've commented on that on previous episodes, the same exact suggestion, educate the youngsters to grow up and know what they have to do. And what's happening today is that we're embracing many technologies really fast, and it's on the responsibility of the service, the app, or whatever you download to teach you how you have to use it. Headspace has an awesome way to tell you that. Dropbox tries to also make maybe your life a bit more productive, a bit easier, and in some way it also educates you. But what happens when we're left to the social media apps that also do their job in educating us, but I doubt that those are dubiously good habits to have. I don't really know how it would have to happen, but I also agree that we need something like that. Mm. Mindful tech to manage your time, see when it's good or bad to interact with certain people through apps or not, how much time you need to spend, even like data and file management. Like, how do we deal with that? You just buy a phone.
Absolutely.
And then you worry about it getting filled until it breaks or it gets stolen. And then you buy a new one, right? They make it really hard.
And it's really interesting because talking about this thing about the data, we have so much data and then we never use it. We are all scared of losing our data. A couple of years ago, I was drinking a coffee and it was on top of my laptop and it broke. I had everything. I didn't have a copy of anything. And I don't miss anything from that computer, I promise you. I don't even remember what I had there. And my life still okay.
One thing I wanted to hear from you is, how do you think portfolio career profiles have passed the test of COVID?
I think that now these kind of profiles are more powerful than ever. Because in a moment in which you have a crisis, you really need profiles that they are adaptable, let's say. So people that they can do different activities, different jobs, they are going to be better at adapting to change. Because as I was saying at the beginning, change, it's a really important part of portfolio career profiles. We love change. I think that during these times, it's really important to help people adapting to change. These kind of profiles, they help people doing that.
I also would like to learn a bit more about your day-to-day, whether your life is simple or not, or what things you do on your days. The first question I have is, how does your day-to-day look like?
It depends. There are things that I do every day, or at least I try to do every day. One is meditating. I think meditation is really powerful. I discovered it, I would say, 6 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that. It helps me focus. So that's something that I definitely try to do every day. But then my days are different. Some days I'm working with this company I work for in US. Sometimes I am preparing a workshop for my career coaching. It depends. Sometimes I am studying, or I just decide to spend one day reading books. Again, it depends on my energy. I always try to listen to my body and see what it is that I want to do in that specific day. I always also try to keep, for example, I go to bed more or less at the same time. I eat at the same time as well. I have certain things that I'm always doing at the same time. I like to keep that balance because otherwise it's too crazy.
How do you meditate?
I use Headspace, obviously. I told you before that I really like Andy. Now, lately, we have created an online group in which we do meditation every week. That's a project that I created during the quarantine. It's called My Learning Quarantine. And we do different activities. One of them is meditating. I just sit down and relax and I meditate normally from 10 minutes to half an hour a day.
Would you consider your life simple?
I consider my life simple in the outside, let's say, in the sense that I think it's simple because it comes natural. But obviously inside me, there are so many things. So you could say that it's not that simple. But I think that everything that comes naturally and that is authentic is simple. I'm not a big consumer, for example, of things. When I was living in London, I decided to reduce all my belongings to 1 cubic meter. I think that keeping the less amount of things that you can, it's also super powerful. And it also connects you with who you are.
What could be easier?
What could be easier? Many things could be easier. The world could be a better place in many ways. I would like to have a house in many different places. That would make my life easier because I love traveling and I always find that it's a little bit difficult having to look for a place, and it would be much easier if I had a house in every place I could go to.
Yeah, it would make my life easier as well. We've commented on this before, but to summarize, what would be your mission or the contribution you want to make in your field?
I would like to help people being who they truly are. That's the reason why I think I'm in this planet. Because I feel I've been doing it myself so hard that I kind of say that it's not that I'm an expert, but you know this thing of me saying I'm not a specialist on anything? I think the only thing I'm a specialist on is on helping people remove all their labels and be who they are. That's all.
You commented on meditation. Are there any other habits of 30 minutes or less that you do every day?
So I do meditation and then I do HIIT, high intensity interval training. I don't know how you actually say it, but I do that every other day and I really need it.
What are some of your hobbies?
Well, as everything, my hobbies change. I think that this podcast is all about me and all the changes that I do in my life. So it depends. Sometimes like just reading, and I just like start reading for months. And then now, as I was mentioning before, I do a lot of origami for some reason that I don't really get, but it's really funny that I'm just like starting doing that. I love music. I love music. It's one of my big passions. I love listening to music, discovering new music. I love walking while I listen to music. That's something that makes me enjoy a lot.
This is a question that is a bit weird because, you know, if I ask you, do you have any side projects? Should I ask, do you have any projects? I don't know if all your projects are side projects or how does that work?
Yeah, well, for me, everything is one thing, right? Meaning that everything that I do, it's important for me. Yeah, the moment I'm working on, so I have different things going on. One is I am creating a career workshop that is going to be addressed to portfolio career profiles. Well, I have some ideas with other people that I actually cannot talk about. But yeah, like I have different projects going on.
It would be great if you can share with the audience pointers to maybe books, talks, podcasts, anything that comes to mind that can augment the contents on this podcast and maybe also the way you think about your career.
I am a big fan of The School of Life. They are a company that basically they write books, but they also have a YouTube channel and they mix coaching and psychology with design. And it's really, really well done. They have really good products. The book that I was mentioning before, it's one from them. I love a book called A Job to Love, which is from this company again. Also, in terms of TED Talks, I like the ones from the founders of Design Thinking. Obviously, Tim Ferriss, all his podcasts. Another book I would recommend, it's one called The Obstacle is the Way. It's based on the Stoics. I am also a fan of the Stoics. That's something that we could talk in another moment. And then if they feel they have the same profile, then there are many articles about it. I would just recommend people to just like type portfolio career profile and just have a look to all the articles that you can find there. Because once you discover that you have this profile, you then realize that there are many people that also have it.
You should also watch the two TED Talks that Carmen recommended to me. I'll post the links on the episode notes. These are TED Talks by Emily Wapnick, talking about the Renaissance profile, the multipotentialites, as she calls them, or she calls us, I don't know. And then the other TED Talk from Adam Grant. So we're getting close to the end. Before we wrap up, how can people connect with you and how can people learn more about this life coaching and your workshops and the things that you're doing?
I would say through my LinkedIn profile at the moment, because again, this is coming back to the labels thing. I'm just like reluctant to have a website for the moment because I would need to define myself more. I'm just trying to not do that. So I'm just trying to find a way to do that in a more authentic way, let's say, but it's difficult. So I would say LinkedIn, it's the best way, or Facebook, or just like they can contact you if they want as well. And then you tell me.
Yeah, there are going to be links to everything that we mentioned on the episode on the show notes as well.
Mm-hmm.
And one last question I have for you.
Yeah.
I'm curious about when you reached out to me that you said like, there was this message that I found on, I don't know, somewhere online from Carmen that says like, we need to connect.
Yeah.
Right? That was the icebreaker. We hadn't talked for, I don't know, maybe 5 or 4 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So what led you to think that we had to connect?
Well, the fact that you have a portfolio career profile. And I saw that from the very beginning. You do so many things. You jump from one thing to another. You do drawings and you jump and you write and then you do podcasts and then you work for a big company and then you're an architect. That's it. You do many, many different things. You are like an entrepreneur. And I thought, I need to connect with this person. I need to reconnect, let's say, because at that moment when we met, we didn't spend much time together. So when I saw that, I always connect with people that I think they have my same profile. Because I think that two brains are better than one. And two brains are not two brains. Two brains are 1,000 brains.
Well, thank you. All right. I think this is it. Thank you so much, Carmen, for this time that we spent together.
It's been great. Thank you for this opportunity. I think it's been great, at least for me.
Yeah, I would give a bit of context. So I currently live in Malaga, Spain, and Carmen lives in Granada. But currently we find ourselves in a really small town called Torrox, like in the midst of nowhere, in the coast of the south of Spain. You know, I was really eager to find somebody who I could meet to interview in person, because the last two interviews I've done have been remote. And with this, all this situation of the coronavirus and stuff, it's been tough. So it's been great to touch base in person.
Same. I think that this has been really, really powerful, let's say.
I will just point everyone, you know, you should definitely reach out to us, to me, Nono, at Nono ESP. So that's NONOESP on Twitter and Instagram and some other places. And feel free to find Carmen on LinkedIn. But I would really love to hear if you like this episode, or if you have any comments or any thoughts. Once again, this was the Getting Simple podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. If you enjoyed the show, remember that you can find a detailed list of episode notes, transcripts, and previous episodes at gettingsimple.com. I'm also starting to upload learning videos to YouTube to teach how I do things, and we'll start live streaming in the near future, covering topics from computational design and creative coding to design automation, machine learning, workflow optimization, or even how I make this podcast. You can find these videos if you go to gettingsimple.com/YouTube and look for my learning playlist.